Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt. And this is Bookworm, a book I've been waiting for with enormous anticipation, has finally appeared. It's Marilyn Robinson's Jack. It's the fourth book in her Gilead series, which begins with Gilead and then Home and then Lila. And now we have Jack. I would say that any of these books can be read separately, but I have to express the fact, maybe I'm just in a trance, but Jack, the newest, is my favorite. I've read it 3 times so far, and I'm still enamored. I'm lost in it. I just think it's a wonderful book. Jack is mentioned in earlier books. Did you know him well when you started to write this book?
Well, you know, I had a very strong sense of him. It's hard to describe, but to say I knew him might overstate, but I sort of understood what it would be like to be in a room with him, you know? Maybe even to attempt conversation with him.
Well, the book is written almost entirely in dialogue. This is not to say that there aren't descriptions, but they're descriptions that are parts of the dialogue. And it seemed to me that the dialogue, the ongoing dialogue between Jack and Della is an exploration of how people can truly come to know one another. Did you know them better still as you wrote them? This seems to me to be a very intimate book.
You know, conjuring a character is one of the most mysterious things in the world. I couldn't really say whether I felt as if I was creating Jack or he was unfolding himself to me in some sense, you know. I mean, that was a lot of the interest of, for example, the dialogue scenes for me, because I could cross between interior and exterior in that way, you know. And that's a kind of frontier that Jack himself does not cross easily, you know, made it interesting.
These characters gradually gain the ability to look into one another's eyes. What year does this take place, Marilyn?
Well, you know, I'm using Jack as my calendar, and he is vague on these subjects, but it's certainly somewhere between the late 40s and the early 50s.
And Della is a young Black woman. She's a teacher. In fact, Della is the daughter of a bishop. That revelation and that she keeps it to herself is an amazing one, because Jack learns that Della's father is likely to be against interracial marriage because of the importance of the development of the race. He is like a father to thousands of parishioners. They're drawn together, Jack and Della. This is a novel about love.
Yes, it is. It is a novel about love and about freedom in a certain sense, because it would be love that would be, if they were to acknowledge the claims of the world, which are very substantial in Della's case, it would be at the cost of the fact that they love each other.
I don't think I've read a novel where the characters were this deeply in love with one another, despite their parents and their families, despite the culture around them. We meet them at the beginning of the book. Very soon they are encountering one another by coincidence in a cemetery at night. They think that they don't like one another. They think they have difficulties, but Della is nervous. She's caught, locked in at night in a white person's cemetery, and seeing Jack, she asks for his company. She asks him to sit with her. And during this initiation into the half-life of a cemetery, Jack knows the cemetery well. He's someone who frequently lives outside, carries his bedroll with him, knows the different cherubs on the monuments, and wants to introduce them to Della. He's introducing her to our form of heaven on earth. Marilyn, where did that scene come from?
Well, I went to St. Louis. I've been there several times just to look at the city, you know. And one of the things that is very prominent there is a cemetery, a vast cemetery called Bellefontaine. It's, I wandered around in it a good deal myself. It's beautiful, and it is full of, the tremendous importance that people give to the lives that have ended and are memorialized there, you know. A cemetery is a kind of summary, or what's the word I want? Well, in any case, the compendium, as it were, of what people have been and done.
There are many bums and beggars who spend their nights hiding behind the graves. The gates are locked. The moon is a small moon. And there we are with Jack and Della, who are inadvertently exploring each other. Della has had trouble because she feels that Jack turns everything into a joke. Jack is discovering the enormous pleasure that he feels when he can make Della laugh. In other words, for him, she's too serious. For her, he's not serious enough. And somehow, by the end of this night, they've been given an intersection point where they can, what would you say, be one another, yes?
Absolutely. They are not complete apart from each other after they have fallen in love, after they've come to know each other, you know? I think of Della as being in that cemetery partly because in an earlier scene, Jack has described a particular tree to her. You know, he acquainted her with the idea of going into that cemetery, and then he finds her there.
The word terror recurs for Jack. She says of the face of a cherub that the cherub looks startled. He says that the cherub seems to be expressing terror. And the terror that Jack is feeling is the terror of being in love, of discovering love in an impossible situation. In a cemetery on a moonlit night, these two people who have had a dinner before this that went kerfooey some people that Jack owed money to approached and took him out and beat him up. And you see, Della thought he was leaving because he didn't want white people to see him with a black woman. And so she's very distrustful. He has explained himself, and she's told him, I have to decide whether I believe you or not. You hurt and embarrassed me more than I've ever been embarrassed in my entire life. What goes into her decision to trust him?
I think that, you know, if they're fortunate, people actually experience each other differently than they're sort of socially instructed to do. She feels an affinity that might simply die in the air, you know, except for the accident of his feeling the same affinity, you know. I mean, there, when you think about it, or when I think about it, there simply are people you trust. And this is not necessarily because their credentials are all that good or anything like that. It's mm-hmm. that outside the framework that you're sort of socially instructed to value and understand people within, you know. I think that the great distraction that people have from each other is the idea that you can know about someone and that this equals knowing them, you know.
Each of these Gilead books features a central couple. In Gilead, it's actually two ministers. One of them is Jack's father. And we've been throughout your work with couples. In housekeeping, it's two sisters and their adoptive aunts. But this feels like when you were writing, you went into a depth that the couple impulse had never led you to before. I mean, were you frightened to write a novel primarily about love, heavenly love?
Well, you know, I get myself sort of involved in these fictions, and then everything else falls away, you know. I think that the fact that Jack is so aware of the possibility of his doing harm, I mean, he's even afraid that he will intentionally do harm, and it sensitizes him in a very radical way. The choice of lingering with this relationship with Della is a very large choice for him that has to have a correspondingly great motivation, as it were, you know.
I'm talking to Marilyn Robinson about her magnificent new novel, Jack. I want to tell my listeners that due to the pandemic, we are taping from our respective residences, so you may hear unusual sounds. Marilyn, I can't tell you what a powerful reading experience this is. Of course, I felt that way about each of your books, but somehow it felt like the experience of love was one that you were creating in fiction for the first time, that this was a book, like the essays, a book of instruction, a book that asks all of us who read to go into this night of the soul and emerge with Jack and Della. I have to tell you, I'll never forget them. I mean, they're powerfully engraved in my sensibility. And I, for however strange or embarrassing this sounds, I fell in love with them.
Well, thank you. I'm so glad. That makes me very happy.
Did you ever experience or know, pardon a personal question, a love like this?
Oh, you know, I kind of say no. One of the things that has struck me is that I took a lot for granted in the course of my life. There were many things that did not receive the attention they deserved, shall we say. You know, I think that part of the creation of Jack for me is the stripping away of the kinds of assumptions and so on that make you miss life, you know. I think we are desensitized by habit and by the idea that some time will not end and there will always be something else where the real thing begins or the real importance lies. And he doesn't feel that way at all. That's, you know, that was part of my using him as a surrogate for myself in terms of thinking what the world would seem like if one were less defended against it, you know?
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to KCRW's Bookworm. I'm talking with Marilyn Robinson about her new novel, Jack. We'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, this is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Marilyn Robinson about her new novel, Jack, the fourth novel in Robinson's Gilead series, an intergenerational saga of race, religion, family, love, and forgiveness, centered in a small Iowa town. This one takes place mainly in St. Louis, and both of the characters have the hanging over them, looming over them, the need to go home. Jack has not gone to his mother's funeral. He has a brother who comes and drops off envelopes with money. Jack has lived outdoors. He's been imprisoned. He calls himself the Prince of Darkness. He has many names for himself, and they primarily seem to come from the way he was raised. And it seems as if Della, in her special beatitude, is working a conversion. She's not converting him. She's recreating the possibilities of his spirit. What do you say, Marilyn?
I think that that's a very perceptive reading. I think one of the things that interested me in the character of Jack, I think that we live in a culture that has around it the relics and even the language of a sort of metaphysics it no longer understands or cannot entirely endorse or whatever. I mean, many metaphysics because of the nature of our culture and so on, but nevertheless, for individual people, I think this is often true, that if they have to fall back on some absolute statement, they do it in terms that they have learned in a half light of, you know, a sort of half civilization that they, you know, inherit and don't inherit, you know. I mean, Jack's thinking, in the terms of his thinking, he's as theological as anybody, you know. And yet he, as you say, more or less, he picks up the language from his rearing.
It seems, you know, throughout the book, great passages from Milton, from Shakespeare, particularly Hamlet, from some of the metaphysical poets like Thomas Traherne, are they love poetry, these two, the school teacher and the Prince of Darkness. The great writing that we have inherited as a vast culture is there to initiate us into a level of being that would not be there for us without the great writers we've had. I know that you love Melville and Emily Dickinson and Walt Whitman, that the writers that have inspired you beautifully also inspire your characters as well.
That's certainly true. That's certainly true. I think there's this, you know, this country has produced a really magnificent literature. And there seems to be a sort of rule that we should never allude to it. Although virtually anybody who writes has a fairly deep acquaintance with it, you know. And I just decided, you know, I will simply let Jack have a mind full of beautiful books. Why not? He would have. He not only hangs out in the library to hide, he does some very selective reading while he's there. You know, why not?
Oh, he's wonderful. Pardon me, identify with him. He finds a copy, it's been recommended to him, of William Carlos Williams's Patterson. And because he doesn't have the ability to borrow a book without stealing it, he doesn't have a card, he hides Patterson. But when he comes back, who hasn't had this experience? It's not where he hid it. Did someone else take it out? And the librarian is so conscious of his doings, of the people in the library. Librarians are like this. She tells him that William Carlos Williams is where he belongs under W. And he finds it. And he is so eager to show it to Della. He's afraid that she won't like it. Now, this fear that our dearest friends won't love our deepest books is a lifelong fear, I think, of any reader. Yes, as you say, it's rare that we speak of our own literature. It's as if we're afraid of affirming its virtues. And somehow, Marilyn, with these four books, you've deeply presented a book, a series of books, that enter our literature, our canon, as we no longer like to call it. I'm rereading all of the books, and I have to say, I love them deeply. Is this the last one, do you think?
I really don't know. It's too soon after writing Jack for me to have another imagination going in my mind, you know? These things seem to sort of, emerge spontaneously. I do think about them, and I obviously that would become the germ of any further book. But I can't feel at this point as if I have adequate purchase on another Gilead character to extend the series at this point. I might surprise you by doing something different entirely, or not different. I think I will probably be recognizable, whatever I do.
Well, whatever you do, I'm your constant reader, and you recommended to me the way these characters recommend other books. In that book, you recommended Tono Bungay by H.G. Wells, and I think I would read any book that you mention. That is part of being a heart-led fan of a writer, and I'm not embarrassed by being a fan of Marilynne Robinson. What books are you recommending nowadays?
Well, you know, there are several things going on. One is that I'm trying to prepare for a lecture on Dante, which means that I'm reading, you know, Petrarch and Cavalcanti and all these people and books that surround him, trying to understand it in a fuller way, I will have to say, than I do without, you know, without exploration. But this is that other kind of reading I do. I mean, they're all wonderful, you know, but it's not like this is the new book that is in my hand, you know.
One of the things that I love about my guest, Marilynne Robinson, is that I have no hesitation about saying that her work enters the future of our literature in a profound and meaningful way. Thank you, Marilynne, for joining me.
Well, it's such a pleasure. Always delightful to talk with you.
I feel the same way. I've been talking with Marilynne Robinson. Her new book is Jack. It's published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. I want to tell my listeners that due to the pandemic, we are taping from our respective residences, so you may hear unusual sounds. You can visit kcrw.com/bookworm for a podcast of today's show, also available at Apple, Spotify, and all other podcast services. It can also be listened to on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. The show airs in Berlin and all over the world. It's a great honor to be able to have these conversations to a global public. I want to make a special thanks to Bookworm show collaborators Alan Howard and Sean Sullivan. The show wouldn't be without them. Production manager J.C. Swadek and technical director Mario Diaz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
Read this, read that, read this, bookworm. Read this, read that, read this. I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Charles Yu is our guest.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.